from your favorite source for Chicago White Sox talk, delivering news, interviews, analysis, and more. This is the Sox Machine Podcast with your hosts, Jim Margulis, James Fegan, and Josh Nelson.
Thanks, Rob, and welcome to the Sox Machine Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Nelson. It is Sunday, December 7th, 2025, and we are recording this episode from Casa de... No, that's not right. From the Sox Machine House at the Winter Meetings for the 2025 edition. And in this episode, as it's the night before the Winter Meetings begin, we're going to be talking about what we are hoping to learn from day one of the Winter Meetings, as we'll get an opportunity to speak with both manager Will Venable and general manager Chris Getz, and also chat with a bunch of folks across the national landscape when it comes to Major League Baseball. And we'll talk about how the Minnesota Twins might not be selling now, and how the Chicago Cubs are kicking the tires on a couple of interesting third base options. And joining me from the house in Orlando is the managing editor of SoxMachine.com. It's Jim Margulis, and of course, Sox Machine's beat reporter, James Fegan. And Jim, I got to say, for our podcast listeners, I didn't get a chance to set up the video, so I'm sorry for all those listening on YouTube that you can't see how swanky this Airbnb is. Well done, sir.
Yeah, I guess there are perks for having a conference in Orlando middle of the week before school's out in December, showing up in a downpour and getting those kind of off-season rates, I think, helps. But this is pretty nice to be all in the same room, in comfortable chairs around a coffee table, and a whole lot of wires that you brought through that American Airlines rummaged through, apparently. Yes. And got all wet. So, good job enduring that.
Yeah, and they only one cable went missing, the power cable to my laptop. So this is not going to be a very lengthy podcast. But James, how are you feeling? We're here in Orlando.
Feeling good. Got to the Airbnb in time to get the end of the Bears game on television. That felt like it grounded me into a right mindset for the following 3 days. I think this living room a lot more like is suited for your setup, whereas last year was a bit more like someone's podcasting in the kitchen type of feeling for it. I'm prepared for relatively little to happen. It all feels right. Back to my first winter meetings was in Orlando.
Was it? Oh, that was at the Dolphin.
Yeah, is it the whale and dolphin?
Or swan and dolphin.
Swan. I always got the other animal wrong.
Yes,
I didn't know how long I'd be able to do this job if every winter meetings was going to be like that, where you're stuck in one of the same circular lobby for 4 days. Eating the reheated paninis that they sell at the little hotel shop, possibly for every meal. That seemed like too much of a trip to the far side. Hopefully this one is a little bit more mild, but I'm not counting on it.
So tomorrow, day one of the winter meetings, both Chris Getz and Will Venable will be available for their media sessions for the week. And James, I'll start with you because you represent us in these media scrums. When it comes to like Chris Getz, what are you hoping to learn from that media session with him?
Good question. Like as I mentioned, or in a preview that might be up by the time you're listening to this, like they can make some things official this week that kind of lowers their difficulty level in filling out what content or what they're going to talk about a little bit, given that the present team doesn't have the traditional things to talk about in terms of like where they stack up in the division or why do we think this acquisition is going to put us over the top in the playoff contention. Yeah. They can talk about their coaching staff, which they have yet to make official, and I wouldn't have realized until Jim pointed out what they made official at this time last year. They can talk about Anthony Kay once it gets official and talks about like what other needs they have for the rotation and if it's going to be another guaranteed deal, if it's going to be more like candidates, swingmen, or guys on one-year deal who might mix between rotation and the bullpen to compete with Cannon and Burke, or if they're going to, you know, they need to acquire another starter. They have so many other needs that it kind of makes it a question. But not a lot has changed since the GM meetings. You know, they, I don't, you've signed Anthony Kay, and obviously that was the biggest part of like maybe the most pressing need in their roster was just innings in the rotation. But as far as, you know, the Luis Robert market, maybe it's a little bit, maybe what I was trying to find out off the record last week is something being asked more on the record this week in terms of like, so are you really a 60% chance to trade them?
Yeah.
This offseason, that doesn't seem like quite how things were trending at the deadline. So more clarification about that, or more hopefully honesty about where they think things stand for that, especially with Cedric Mellons off the market. That could bubble out, but there's not, it doesn't quite feel like 2022 winter meetings where it's a bit like Rick Hahn's got an answer for this type of like situation. It's just the nature of where the team is, where they're kind of slowly building up rather than if you don't solve right field in the next 2 months, like there's going to be hell to pay sort of situation with their roster.
Rick Hahn can't answer for it this year meetings. He's going to be on the draft lottery broadcast on MLB Network. So he can't answer for his crimes if we pin him in a corner.
How about you, Jim? What are you hoping to learn from either Chris Getz or Will Venable on Monday?
I think Venable, you know, once you get a staff in place, you know, it's an unusual way the staff has come about and not in a way that we thought when, you know, he kind of had a half staff of leftovers and then thought, okay, he's going to fill in more with his guys. I'm like, nope, still really interviewing, you know, I'd say thoroughly. Like, I'm really curious when it comes to first base coach, Jose Laguerre. We'll find out how to pronounce his name officially. But just the way his background does not seem like the, it really does seem more developmental versus the kind of first base coach who also knows the thing about the outfield and is, you know, can run a stopwatch and yell back really loudly and is kind of like just kind of a vibes guy who everybody likes and can hold a job for 15 years by being likable. That's, I think, you know, as the staff rounds out what they do with, you know, perhaps catcher, since that's a vacancy, although Walker McKinnon might be taking that over. If there's an offensive coordinator or some kind of nebulous title that nobody really knows what it is, what's that about? Looking forward to maybe the other manager sessions to find out more about guys that the White Sox have hired, because we did that last year with, you know, learning about Walker McKinnon from Pat Murphy and so forth, that, you know, that might be instructive, even if like what the White Sox are covering are things we've already talked about, but just made official.
Yeah. I think for me, when it comes to like Chris Getz, for example, I wonder if because they're not serious contenders for a lot of these free agents and they may be on the slower side of making moves, if he would be like a good analyst. Like, Chris, you're the analyst. Tell us, what is the market like right now? Because he doesn't have to hide anything, right? They're not, if they're not that involved in the top free agents, or if their only trade asset really is Luis Robert Jr. right now, is he hearing things from other teams and other aspects of the winter meetings market that he can shine light on?
He's one of us.
He's one of us. Yes. That's what I would just ask him, like, that if I get a chance tomorrow. Chris, you're the analyst. Tell us, how is this market really going? Is it going as slow as some people think it is?
Your face pressed against the window wishing you could play and you can't?
Yeah. That was the buddy situation. So that is tomorrow for the Chicago White Sox. And on Tuesday is the MLB draft lottery, right, Jim?
Yes.
Right. Yeah. So those are the two big things upcoming. And the Rule 5 draft will be on Wednesday, podcast listeners. And again, we'll have all that coverage for you guys on SoxMachine.com. Other things that happened as far as on Sunday, there was the Hall of Fame vote. And a bit surprising, Jim, Jeff Kent, he's making the Hall of Fame. He's one of the best hitting second basemen ever in Major League Baseball history. He really benefited batting behind Barry Bonds all those years. But he's the only player to make it to the Hall of Fame. Are you a bit surprised?
Yeah, reading the reactions from other people in baseball who had been writing about it and kind of monitoring the committee field, you know, they maybe in hindsight weren't surprised or totally shocked, because he did have a pretty simple case, like power hitting second baseman, long career, hit some milestones. You know, there aren't many second basemen who had the kind of run production he had. So he stands out in that regard. You know, no ties to PEDs. So, you know, versus, you know, other guys like Don Mattingly, abbreviated career, Dale Murphy kind of declined early, Fernando Valenzuela, you know, kind of a phenomenon, but not necessarily the longevity that you expect from a starter. You had the simplest case. I kind of looked at the field and thought, maybe there isn't a Hall of Famer here. And it certainly is weird that, you know, he kind of rides on Barry Bonds' coattails, but Barry Bonds did not get any kind of support from the committee. So the guy who's kind of responsible for Kent getting in and the main catalyst for all those runs he drove in and all those homers he hit and all those runs he scored, you know, he's, you know, Bonds on the outside looking in. So it does feel weird, and there is, I think, going to be some tension just in terms of what the Hall is about. If, like, say there's a shutout at the BBWAA level and Kent's the only one inducted, what kind of crowd are they going to draw? Does Kent have fans, like fans who would travel to see him, like Lou Whitaker? You know, he's been brought up as a second baseman who is more deserving than Kent and hasn't gotten the shot at the committee, or, you know, this favorable committee that could get him in. Like Lou Whitaker would have fans coming in from Detroit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huge fan base. Does Jeff Kent have those fans? He didn't seem particularly likable as a guy. Just kind of seemed like a grouch and complained a lot, and didn't really seem like he enjoyed the game. There wasn't like a love of baseball emanating from him as a player. So curious if he's inducted. You know, maybe Carlos Beltran gets in, but like, what kind of reactions is he going to get? What kind of turnouts he going to get? And is it going to be kind of flat? And then are you kind of getting the spiral of just these tertiary players getting inducted while the core greats from the steroid era are just kind of left out, and you have a very strange representation of the late 90s and early aughts?
For a future Hall of Fame voter, and we'll get you there, James.
Don't have to.
Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens are now not eligible for any type of Hall of Fame voting until 2031. So that's 6 years from now. Do you think that the landscape as far as baseball media will ever change their mind regarding those two?
Yeah, I think so. I feel like, yeah, there's going to be transformation in the landscape in that time. And I think baseball writers are coming through today. Certainly maybe have a wider breadth in terms of experience with other sports and seeing what kind of doping or, you know, pushing to advance tactics for physical performance are leaking out into other sports and how they'll apply here. And I think as we move on, the kind of, I guess, mentality of, hey, whatever you need to do to achieve it, it's all about the ends sort of approach to, you know, late stage capitalism and you know, everything that spoils out from it kind of only accelerates from there. I would just say, and I'm not a fan of these rules in general, but if every BBWA writer had to run a marathon, I think that would lend some perspective, because like the final week of training, if Victor Conte like approached me and said like, hey buddy, I got some injection that it's gonna make you feel amazing on race day, I'd be like,
sign me up.
What's the closest bathroom? Let's go do this. I think until you achieve that level of desperation and make your own decision about what you feel is view as ethically acceptable, maybe your perspective's a little bit lacking.
You should have filtered your blood like Bryce Harper is doing. Isn't that what he's doing? He's like having his blood pass through.
At the very least, I googled like easy blood doping at home at some point and saw what would come back.
Hopefully through a VPN.
Again, there are 16 members on this contemporary baseball era panel. Jeff Kent received 14 of the 16. You need 12 votes in order to make the Hall of Fame. Carlos Delgado was second with 9 of the 16 votes. Don Mattingly, and Dale Murphy both finished with six, meaning that Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Gary Sheffield, and Fernando Valenzuela had fewer than five of the 16 votes. So I would love to see some of those ballots. I'm imagining that they didn't. I think you can only vote, what, up to three?
Four.
Yeah, I wonder if some ballots don't have all four. And maybe that's just how they felt, like Jeff Kent was the only Hall of Famer in their mind. But Jeff Kent is going to the Baseball Hall of Fame, but I do really have to, I wonder if things will change, especially as far as like Barry Bonds. Yeah. Roger Clemens, there's off-the-field stuff that is impossible to ignore.
Yeah, I think with the committees and with Bonds and Clemens and maybe like Gary Sheffield is kind of in the same waters because like he didn't kind of get much support on his time in the ballot. I guess Sammy Sosa is another one who just is in that mess. It really comes down to kind of what the Hall wants and what Jane Forbes Clark wants. And, you know, they stack the committees to where, or they can stack the committees to where like they prefer a certain kind of candidate or a certain kind of history over others. And certainly the players who are in the Hall aren't necessarily the most inviting, or, you know, if they are supportive of Bonds, they keep it kind of close to the vest. And if they aren't supportive, they tend to trumpet it. You say like, you know, no cheaters in the Hall. You know,
yeah.
So it seems like the, and you know, that's something the Hall changes. They changed the eligibility from 15-year window to 10 just to get Bonds and Clemens off the ballot quicker. So it really seems like, you know, the Hall can put its thumb on the scale for making sure that certain players don't get in if it does, they don't meet the character or performance history that they feel reflects well on the Hall's values or whatever you want to call it. So, yeah, I'm optimistic. Like, I think maybe the BBWA will be more accepting of, a wider variety of players. You know, not necessarily just, you know, you're going to see with starting pitchers, for instance, like with, you know, standards changing, you're going to, you know, and not being the traditional benchmarks. So I think there are going to be a lot of different ways that the voting changes as more analytically inclined writers fill the electorates. But I think when it comes to the players who are already off the ballot, I think the Hall can continue keeping them out.
Well, around Major League Baseball, and this is where we'll wrap up as far as the podcast, a couple of things, actually three things in particular. According to The Athletic, the Pittsburgh Pirates have offered a four-year contract in excess of over $100 million to Kyle Schwarber. That seems, when I was reading as far as that article from Ken Rosenthal, it seems to me like Schwarber's agent or Schwarber's side of the business is leaking that out as a way of saying, all right, guys, this is my floor. Somebody beat this because I don't want to play in Pittsburgh. But the Pirates are trying. They're trying for Kyle Schwarber. But James, it's an excellent back and forth article as far as with Dan Hayes, old friend of the White Sox beat, and Aaron Gleeman talking about the Minnesota Twins and how Ken Rosenthal's report that the Minnesota Twins may have changed their mind, that they may not be eager sellers, especially during the offseason. They may want to try to see on how far they can go in the first half of 2026 before shifting directions. And I know you cover the Chicago White Sox, but the White Sox do have to worry about the Minnesota Twins.
This is right in my alley because Dan, like, externalizes what he's stressing over usually to, you know, the person sitting next to him, either in the press box or via text. So I am more up on the Minnesota Twins just from having to be a sounding board for his anxiety than I should be.
They're in an interesting situation. Like, they could dominate the winter meetings if they wanted to. If they wanted to pull a Bill Veeck and have a table for sale sign, Joe Ryan and Pablo Lopez and Byron Buxton, they would be the most popular team during the winter meetings. I guess I just don't know what they don't have enough on hand. I think that's what Aaron Gleeman was pointing out in the article in The Athletic, that the Twins currently do not have enough on hand to be serious challengers in the AL Central. So if they're not going to add in this offseason, what exactly are the Minnesota Twins doing? And that's kind of where I'm perplexed. I don't know what direction they're going, if they're going to be holding on to these guys.
It's a good test case of how an organization trying to be considerate of a lot of different elements can wind up making a decision that from a 30,000 foot view, like, makes no sense. They have a new manager in Derek Shelton, who's not just a new manager, he's not just like a placeholder for their building years, but somebody who came up in the org like before. They care about him and want to give him a fighting chance and don't want to be like, here's this like ready-made 110 loss team.
Okay.
We're going to push you off. We're going to push your little dinghy off the dock and also fire three shots into the hull on your way out. They don't want to do that. They want to give him a fighting chance. Buxton like wants to be there like very sincerely, and that was part of the contract extension they reached with them and the no trade clause and how he has it. He's rebuffed like other like entreaties where it might make sense for him to waive his no trade clause like the last deadline because he wants to be there. They really like Pablo Lopez. They think he's super high character. They were trying to build around him. They were higher on him than the market when they acquired him initially, and generally, you know, other than the injury last year, seems like they were mostly right about their assessment of them. So it's these core pieces that they're a little bit more hesitant to go after, even though I think you could objectively look at what they did last deadline and where the organization's at as a result of that. And also looking at their prospects, like, they got some nice guys coming up, but like, it's not like ready-made juggernaut or anytime soon or anything like that. And be like, you already went past a point of no return last trade deadline. You're fooling yourselves to think that you shouldn't just keep going at this point. But they getting over the hump with purging like the guys who have the no trade clause to be there, you know, purging people who have multiple years of control down the road. Like, what are you doing when you, what are you saying to your fan base if you trade, you know, Joe Ryan, Byron Buxton, Pablo Lopez with so many years of control left? Are you just saying like, hey, see you in 4 years to everybody when you're already seeing attendance fall off a cliff for them?
Yeah.
Not that that's, you know, a unique problem to them in the AL Central, but very much something you're dealing with. And you're, you know, cutting the knees out of a new manager that you want to succeed there, that you hopefully have a long run. Is it going to be hard to be if you give them like 100, 300 lost seasons right off the bat? So, yeah, from all a cold logical standpoint, certainly from outside, they should just rip off the Band-Aid and just keep going. There's nothing to salvage. But I understand the individual personal decisions that they got into where they feel like, shouldn't we at least give it a go? We can always still trade the guys at the deadline. How big of a damage would it be? But it also just feels like a little bit like biting slash wasting your time for the first half of the season.
Yeah, and I guess with Buxton, again, he has that no trade clause that he has to waive. So that makes it a little bit more difficult. But for a market that's just starving for starting pitching, Jim, like, I don't know. I don't think they get anywhere close, like with the Joe Ryan or Pablo Lopez, a return that the White Sox got for Garrett Crochet. But if I would have more confidence that the Minnesota Twins could surprise in the first half if Royce Lewis could stay healthy and if Brooks Lee could take a step forward in his development. Like, that could still be a pretty dangerous lineup for the Minnesota Twins. They still have a great 1-2 in their starting rotation, but I thought the writing was on the wall, the trade deadline, as James mentioned. I just figured the Twins would continue going down this Kmart Blue Light Special clearance sale. But at the same time, if you do tear it down, does it impact your ability to sell the team, which is, I assume, is still what they want to do?
Well, I mean, they have the limited partners with no pathway to ownership. You know, unlike Justin Ishbia when he bought in, like, you know, there was an assumed way that he could get controlling interest of the team because he bailed on the Twins in order to buy into the White Sox. And, you know, eventually the White Sox confirmed that. But with the Twins, like, they have a couple limited partners who bought in to help address this big debt problem they have. And does that mean that the Polads are going to keep it? Does that mean this is all just kind of buying in to sell later when maybe the debt isn't hanging over the franchise and they can get a better valuation, or the CBA is settled, and so maybe that, you know, they get an extra, you know, $0.2 billion or something like that on their sale price? You know, I don't exactly know, but it's murky because, like, the Polads have long expressed like an indifference or like a reluctance to be the stewards of the Twins. Like, they've tried to sell multiple times and haven't been able to do it. So I really don't know what the big picture is for them and what this this influx of cash that they have, you know, is that part of the reason why they don't want to completely cave in a roster that could be like respectable if everybody keeps together? Is it like the TV deal or like the not wanting to completely undermine their TV ratings when the whole situation is tenuous right before CBA? Does that matter? Like just to completely just nuke all interest in your team? So yeah, I don't envy them. I mean, I kind of do because they own a team and they really make it look like a pain in the ass to own a team. But they have a whole bunch of forces that I don't know if anybody entirely understands, because I don't know if anybody really understands the Pollad's thinking when it comes to just how much they want to be in this business.
Now, those are good points, Jim. The Minnesota Twins are one of those six teams that their fans are going to have to watch on the ESPN app this upcoming year after MLB sold MLB.TV to ESPN. That's going to be one of the things that I'm curious to hear in the media room, if what the Minnesota Twins are doing, if they do change their mind and hear any gossipers. We're just gonna stick with that. That's just gonna be part of the jargon now.
You establish like a defined spelling for it as well.
We do. We'll talk that through. We got plenty of time at the Airbnb in Orlando to figure that all out. And the last thing from a Chicago perspective that you might hear as far as in the radio outside of why did the Chicago Bears not beat the Green Bay Packers on Sunday. The Chicago Cubs are kicking the tires on a couple of free agents, Alex Bregman and Eugenio Suarez, as far as options at third base. We'll see if the Cubs actually do spend money, serious money, this offseason as they try to improve the hot corner. So that's the first night of the winter meetings. We got a ton of more content coming your guys' way. Like we mentioned in the intro, both Chris Getz and Will Venable will be speaking, so we'll have some audio and video from those media scrums. I'll be chatting with folks across the national MLB landscape, asking questions about what they think of the Chicago White Sox and how that second half of the 2025 season went, and if they're as optimistic as we are when it comes to top prospects like Colson Montgomery. So a lot more content coming your guys' way from Orlando, and thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. If you just discovered the Sox Machine Podcast, you can subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts, such as Spotify and Apple Music. You could also listen and watch our videos on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/SoxMachine. Follow us on social media. We are on all the platforms, and we will be busy these next couple of days on social media. We are at Sox Machine. Follow James if there is breaking White Sox news. He's at JR Fegan. I am at SoxMachine_Josh. We are on Blue Sky at SoxMachine.com. James is JRFegan.SoxMachine.com, and I am Josh.SoxMachine.com. When we do have that exclusive content during the winter meetings, you will need to be a Sox Machine subscriber. So make sure to go to SoxMachine.com/products to sign up if you are already not a subscriber, or if you are a monthly subscriber and you decide that you want to shift gears and be an annual subscriber, we're still working with Defector.
Yes, that deal runs through December, where Defector is, if you get a gift subscription to Defector, they will comp you a subscription to Sox Machine or for other a choice of four other sites that use the lead platform. But I assume, since you're listening to this podcast, that Sox Machine would be of chief interest, so we'll leave it there.
So there you go. Get a Defector annual membership, gift yourself a Sox Machine annual membership, a 2-for-1, a true 2-for-1. So again, go to defector.com and take advantage of that promo, or you can just sign up at soxmachine.com/products. The Sox Machine Podcast is a production of soxmachine.com, your own for all things Chicago White Sox baseball and part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Alongside Jim Margulis and James Fegan, I'm Josh Nelson. Thanks for listening and watching.